Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to ABL Poddamit, where Pig Fly and Troy is booty.
Gentlemen, it's me, it's the often imitated, never duplicated, love to be calculated, king of buttering sensation information, and the man who's been waiting for the second round to start, Mike, here with the man who had actually messaged me all of 3 seconds ago and said,
Mike, want to do a podcast? And I'm like, Gary, let's do a podcast. Gary, what's going on, buddy?
Gary, can you hear me? I do not know if Gary can hear me. I do not know if I'm live. I do not know if anything is working right now. Let's see. Can Gary hear me? That is the question. Am I just talking to myself right now? That is also the question. Gary, can you hear me? Let me see right now. Gary, you can hear me. Let me check if Gary's muted. Let's see. I don't know. This hasn't happened before.
Gary, you do not appear to be muted. You can hear me, though.
Interesting. Let's check this. Now, Gary, you are muted. Try again.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Yes, I can. Nothing like live radio to actually get us started.
This has never happened before. I actually had to mute you and then unmute you, and then you were fine. Anyways, this is ABL Poddamit, number 11. Gary, you go ahead and talk while I email the league.
Is it number 12?
It's number 11 because I basically just copy and paste the last podcast name and just change the last number when I email it out. And I'm looking at the board right here. It looks like it's number 11, but I could be wrong.
Oh, there we go. We're going number with 11 it is. Lucky number 11.
And Gary, let me ask you real quick, and this is live radio. Can you hear like a television in the background where I'm at or no?
No, but my hearing's not so good, so it doesn't matter. I pick and choose what I want to hear.
I'm trying my new microphone, so I'm not entirely sure how it's going to work. The problem is, it picks up everything, so yeah. But anyways, this is ABL Poddamit. This is number 11. If you guys out there wouldn't mind listening and letting us know after the fact if you can hear the feedback, because I don't mind doing it with my old mic when the kids are home, so I don't have all like the TV in background and stuff, you know what I mean? If it bothers people. If not, doesn't matter. I'm going to do this microphone because I don't care what you guys want. I'm going to do what I want to do. Gary, you went 3 for 4. The only one you missed out on was the Jacksonville one.
San Francisco.
Yeah, and no one saw the beatdown in San Francisco coming. He absolutely murdered the team who represented the TML last year in the ABL World Series. So, I mean, do you have anything to take away from that series? Do you think Jacksonville will be back next year? Do you think San Francisco was just that hot? I mean, what do you make of it? Because it was really,
San Francisco's got a very balanced – San Francisco's got a very balanced team. They ended up tying Maple, and if not for a 7-5 record against Maple, Maple would have been in that wild card round instead of San Francisco. So those teams are very evenly matched. I'm looking at a tremendous series there.
It's absolutely it's wonderful. Let's be honest, let's call it as what it is. It's absolutely wonderful that they're playing each other because of the fact that they did tie and that we thought there was going to be a play-in game, but there wasn't. It went head-to-head record. Goldie, won more in the regular season. So as much as we wanted a play-in game, I think we all kind of understood that, when head-to-head it is what it is. But it is
What I think it is with that playoff, Major League Baseball, I believe the tiebreaker rules is if you are to play in for a spot in the playoffs, you get a playoff game. If not, then they're not going to waste the game. They're not going to waste a day on it if both teams are in. I think that's what happened there.
Ain't nobody got time for that. They both got in, which is great. And I do think it's great that they're actually playing each other because it's going to be the beatdown of a lifetime, I think, for one of them. I don't know why I said that. It's it was a beatdown of a lifetime for Jacksonville. I don't think anyone expected him to win. And for the most of the games, I was looking at the box scores last night. He pretty much dominated those games. I was watching the live sims when I could. The weekends are always a little bit harder for live sims because, you know, I got to chase around two little babies. But, it was an absolute beatdown of, Jacksonville. And talking about beatdowns, we can get right to the – let's segue before we get into predictions. The beatdown in Kansas City was on through the first four games. And, you know, in the fifth game, in the ninth inning, he was up, not up. He had just tied it, and it was 5-5. Irvin was a couple outs away from advancing in game five to the divisional round out of the wild card round. And Georgia says no.
Not so quick.
He came back with a huge four-run ninth inning. And then in the game six, KC was leading again, and Georgia said no. And then in game seven, it was close all the way, and Georgia pulled it out 5-3. And, you know, I picked KC. I think a lot of people were actually picking KC that I was talking to, and that's probably based on because KC's offense was insane. And through the first four games, they were great. His pitching, which had been a problem all year, was not a problem in the series whatsoever. His pitching played wonderful compared to what they had done the entire regular season. And his offense, his first four guys were just absolutely crushing the ball the entire series. I mean, that's what they do, but, I mean, they did it. Everything that he needed to win that series happened, and Georgia just, you know, fought back, and Georgia got the victory. But I'm not surprised Georgia won.
I'm not surprised. I picked Georgia. Here's the thing that I think.
Drive the stake in and turn it.
When you got a team that specializes in one aspect of the game, and their bullpen is Kansas City, their bullpen by far is lights out. It's almost like watching a hockey game where, all right, you know what? You got an elite goaltender, which would
right.
be the equivalent of an elite bullpen, the last defense.
Right.
And if the bullpen doesn't perform the way they're supposed to, you can almost make the argument that maybe Tim overmanaged a little bit, getting rid of, going with the quick hook on his starters and relying so heavily on his vaulted bullpen. You can understand why, but
yeah, no shit.
It might have been the issue, and that's my takeaway from that series is that possibly Kansas City got overmatched. Now
yeah.
a lot of the bullpen used throughout the year. You're playing good teams and you're playing bad teams.
Right. Yeah. No.
Tim
sure. Happened in the playoffs.
Tim will probably come on and say somewhere down the road, you know, that his bullpen played well all year long, and they probably did, but against better teams, you kind of get exposed a little bit. And Georgia's got their third and run scored. They were only, 49 runs behind Kansas City in their vaulted offense?
Yeah, no, for sure.
But their pitching was 90 runs better.
Same thing can be said for his offense. You know, you're playing good teams all year, bad teams all year. I do want to note something. I'm looking at the Game 7 box right now. There was a 57-minute rain delay in the second inning. Georgia came out of that getting a run. Casey got a run on the top of third. But then after that, and then Bob just emailed. After that, though, nothing else whatsoever affected anything. So at the end of the third, it was 1-1. And it is interesting because Vasquez went 5 1/3, gave up 7 hits and 4 runs, okay? He also had 8 strikeouts. So he didn't pitch a bad game, per se. I mean, he didn't only give up 2 runs, but you got to think with KC's offense, 4 runs is something he could definitely make up. And then Cano went 8 innings, 10 hits, 3 earned. And it's funny that it's Cano
with that rain delay.
With the rain delay, yeah. And it's funny that it's actually, it's ironic that it was Cano because Cano is the one who lost the game 3, 11-0. And aside from that, we had a 2-run difference, a 3-run difference, a 4-run difference, a 3-run difference, a 2-run difference, a 2-run difference. So this entire series was extremely close. Aside from that game 3, which Vasquez beat Cano 11-0, and then in game 7, Cano beat Vasquez 5-3. So it's just, I love it when shit comes together. I mean, I love storytelling,
yeah.
And this was actually a good story. Another great story was...
just before you go on, you take a look at his box scores, Dar, 9.64 ERA, Buckley, 8.10,
absolutely,
Burton, in one inning, 27 is an ERA. I mean, he had guys that did well. Corvallis,
Yes.
4 1/3, gave up nothing. Kotis, 4 innings, 2.25 ERA. But you look at a 2.25 ERA over 4 innings, that's 1 run in 3 innings. You know what? That 1 run late in the game could mean the difference. So, I mean, he pitched well. I don't know. I just have a feeling he maybe overmanaged a little bit, Kansas City. And he played to his strength. He played the hand he was dealt with. And just to put
really
it in perspective, he won,
really
he won 85
yeah.
games.
Yeah.
So he wasn't – he wasn't elite like the 90-win Georgia team, like Mile High, with what they ended up, as I'm looking this up really quick, 92 wins. San Francisco and Maple, 93 apiece.
Right.
So you start taking a look at this. You know what? 85 wins. He got into the playoffs. He bought himself, you know, 3 extra games with 4 games of revenue on the backside. You know what? He didn't do that bad.
No, and it's funny because
he maximized his potential, I think, and I think seven games was his limit.
And he did, and you know what? KC, dude, but we are going to move on. But KC, I mean, he was an out away from advancing. So it's not like he could – I mean, he loses in 7, could have won in 5. Easily could have won in 5.
Yeah.
So, of course, that's the frustrating part. You're up 5-4 in the top of the ninth. And then Georgia grabs at home, and then Georgia grabs four to grab the victory here. But it's funny because we can save this for another podcast. But just to get Timmy riled up, we'll go. Is this the end of an era, Gary? Is this the end of a run for the great Kansas City team? I don't think it's the end of his run. It may be a pause.
I don't think it's the end of his run, but
yeah, he needs pitching.
You know what? You got the two teams there, Eureka and Kansas City, that – and I think we've said this before. Kansas City and Eureka have been mainstays in our league for almost a decade now.
Yeah. Only two teams with the championship.
But they've been relevant for a decade. And as
right.
you take a look at teams, they start to age out. And you're looking at the up-and-comings of Mile High – and Georgia. Like they've shifted gears and they've kicked it up a notch.
They've entered the conversation. I think we differ a little bit on Eureka. Eureka, a couple of years ago, for those of you who aren't in the league yet or just weren't paying attention, Eureka definitely gave up a lot of their veteran talent, like Kansas City still has. They definitely moved a lot on from a lot of those guys and rebuilt their system. So Eureka, they kind of forfeited some of their elite top end, continue to be dominant talent to kind of refocus to we're going to be in the playoff discussion every single year until these guys are ready to be those top end guys. So I think Eureka's in a better spot than KC in the long run. But yes, both of which have been mainstays. Both of which are the TML elite.
You're looking at the top 4 teams in the Sparky Anderson division staying there for at least the next 2 seasons. Quebec is moving in the right direction. Francois
right.
is going in the right direction. He's 78 and 84 this year. But Francois. But
his name just sounds like
that.
His name just gets me wet, dude. Just saying.
that you get wet is a completely – that's way too much information. But he finished 5.5 games behind Eureka. He'll close the gap next year. He'll be in it up until the end. Portland's moving in the right direction, but on the ABL side, they're moving in the wrong direction. Oakland is moving in the right direction. I'd like to see them get to the 70 win mark, cut down to 100 losses. They're an expansion team. They're working their way up, but they're still 30 games out. They were 21.5 out of a playoff spot. So looking at it next year for those 4 teams, Mile High, Georgia, Kansas City, and Eureka, I don't see that changing much.
No, I agree.
So that's where the Sparky Anderson division is going and where they were.
Let's transition to another series that got out of control rather quickly for a team who was up 3-1. And to get his personal rundown of what happened on his side, from what I heard actually, he left his PC on. I was watching him bite his nails over Hangout. Mr. Olson, what's going on, buddy?
What's happening?
Mr. Olson.
Absolutely, yeah. Why am I giving you such a What, people are not used to me being nice to you. Fuck off, Troy. Okay. Seattle and Duke City went 7. Duke City was up 3-1, and then Seattle fought back after I believe Duke was up in Game 5. And then Seattle came back again, won another close one in Game 9. And then in Game 10, Duke City said, "I'm done playing with my food," and won 10-1 in the finale here. Troy, aside from Ross Golden Arm Allen, which I believe his nickname should be at the start of next season, were you getting a little nervous towards the end of that series? I mean, at the end of Game 6, it didn't seem like you were nervous as much as you were getting annoyed.
I was annoyed, and I hate to say that because I come off very pretentious, and that's your job, not mine. And yeah. So I don't want to offend anybody by you know being that guy, but yeah, I thought my team was better than they showed, and I thought I should have won Game 1 because I didn't understand the managerial decisions that the game made to keep Ross Allen in at 135 pitches. He wasn't pitching well. I mean, for some pitchers, fine. He was at 135 when the eighth inning started, and I'm like, why? Ooh. Why are you going to do this? And it made no sense. He hadn't had his good stuff, and so if he wasn't in the eighth, you got to wonder if that game turns out differently. Now it's a 2-2 game, so does it stay tied?
Yeah,
do we play extra innings? But
yeah, let's not
I was really frustrated with that game.
Yeah, let's not overlook Navarro. I mean, Navarro pitched an absolute amazing game for Seattle that game. You know, going into Duke, giving up 6 hits only, 1 earned run, 5 strikeouts. I mean, he was in 130 pitches. He matched Allen pitch for pitch in this game. And like you said, there's
statistics. Oh, he outpitched Allen. Allen was bad that first game. He did not pitch well. If you look, he didn't throw a lot of strikes. He's a strike pitcher, and he didn't throw a lot of strikes. And he did not pitch well in that first game.
Yeah, he threw 147 pitches, and 85 of them were strikes. He was all over the place. He had 4 walks. On the season, Allen only had 70 walks.
It was a gutty performance.
Navarro, his nickname is
Destiny. He got it through that.
Yeah, no, Destiny had never been in the playoffs before. He had been destined to do so, and that was his first game. He also went on 10-7. I don't know exactly what game is, but Navarro also went 7 innings in that game, gave up 4 runs, but on 10 strikeouts. Navarro was great, both starts he made. I probably would have went back to him again I think that may be a rookie thing on Matt's end. Not a rookie thing, maybe a preference thing, where you went back to Allen 3 times and he went with his best starter twice.
4 times.
I didn't go with Allen 3 times because the computer screwed that up for me. I actually went with Allen 4 times, 2 times in relief.
Yes.
One time in a blowout.
Correct, but what I'm saying is he only went to Navarro twice. And Navarro was – Navarro should have
went to
seven.
Navarro in Game 4 and didn't.
You, okay.
Yeah, he waited until Game 5 for Navarro.
Navarro was still – I believe I was checking at the time. I think Navarro was – can you bring it to me, please? Navarro was still – I'll be right back, guys. Go ahead and talk among yourselves.
Give us your take on that then, Troy. Just keep going.
So I thought Matt should have. I thought Matt should have went to Navarro in 4 like I did with Allen, and he didn't, which was fine. I got that game. But then he went with Navarro in 5, and at that point, if you're going with Navarro in 5, you have to come back to him in 7, at least with a limited pitch count. But I don't know what happened on his pitching side on Game 7, but I'm appreciative for it. But Lorenzo Soto, who the game, you know, had the little snowflake by, said he was cold, and he wasn't the scheduled starter, but I actually screwed something up, and that's why he ended up starting. I was going to go back to Batang, who did not have a good start against Seattle, and then Soto comes in, he's supposed to be cold, and pitches like freaking Cy Young for 8 1/3, and then they bring Ross Allen in the 10-1 game to close it out. So it was quite the scare, but I was glad to get 3 runs in the first and then to pile on after that. The first 3 innings I put up – points on the board.
It kind of reminds me of the game last year where when you played SoCal, what was that, Game 5? And you started that one-star pitcher, and all of a sudden he gets lit up, and that's what you did to Lee. 2 2/3, 10 hits, 7 earned, and he was out of the game, and basically the game was over after the third inning when it was 7-1.
Yeah.
Then you added 3 more, 1 in the 5th, 2 in the 6th, and any hope Seattle had of coming back was just about squashed, pardon the pun.
I was absolutely I was absolutely you know, watching the games play out, and I was in a chat with Scott and with Troy. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, again, not to sound pretentious on my end watching Duke City, but it's like, I don't understand why this team is losing. And Seattle's not bad, but Seattle is in nowhere. Like, it's like if it's like Havana without Hardy trying to play, you know, Montreal going Gallegos for four games in a row. I thought he was – anything could happen. I just thought he was criminally undermatched in this series. So the fact that Matt got him to seven games is a testament to, you know, Seattle gutting it out. I mean, he won game five and six by a couple of runs each. I mean, he won game one by a couple of runs. Duke won by five, one by two, one by four, one by nine. So Duke's wins were a little more dominant, especially if you watch the you know, the games actually play out. But I mean, I don't know, like, not sound like an asshole. I just thought Seattle was criminally overmatched in the series. And whatever. I'm happy Drew Toy got out of it because I would much rather face him in the series. It'll be more fun for me because I don't know Matt yet. He seems like a nice enough guy, all counts, but, everyone wants to see Duke City SoCal anyways. I mean, let's be honest.
I mean, hopefully we can put together another series like last year. That was pretty amazing.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. I like how last year turned out. Game six, I actually
had to turn, I had to do something else, so I had gotten off of the live stream, and then all of a sudden, Scott and Mike on independent conversations just light me up all of a sudden, and I was like, holy shit, what just happened? And apparently Rod Brown, you know, all $11 million of him, he got one, he's actually 2 for 3, but he hit the home run to tie the game with two outs in the ninth, and it's like, okay, well, maybe they're in. So then I put them both into chat together because they were both pinging me separately, and I was like, I can't keep up. So I put them in a chat together, and we were talking. They're just like, oh, you've got this. I was like, no, it's not been good, blah, blah, blah. And here comes Ross Allen out of the bullpen for no fucking reason, and he gives up the go-ahead run to Seattle, and he was 1-2.
Well, me and Scott are sitting there watching it play out, and he's not in the chat or the live feed. I'm kind of texting him through the messenger. We're talking about it. I'm like, yeah, two outs. I'm like, okay. I'm like, oh, here comes another SoCal retread, Robertson, like talking shit on you for that. And then I'm like, oh, he just got hit pitch in for Rod Brown, and then shit on Scott. And I was like, motherfucker, Rod Brown just went fucking yard and hit a home run. I was literally laughing uncontrollably hard. I was like, Rod fucking Brown, like that's what I said out loud. That should be his name, Rod Brown. So, yeah, Duke City advances to face SoCal, and then we have the series that wasn't really a series. I picked Montreal, but I'm a little bummed. I thought Manhattan Beach was going to be much, much, much more competitive in the series. Verm Reddy was not ready in the series. His best pitcher got lit up twice. Gallegos and Hasegawa do what they do, have quality starts, and Montreal pretty much strolled. Even though the games were close, none of these games seemed like they were all, you know, that Manhattan Beach had a chance in any of them. And Montreal strolls in five, I think, like we all expected. And, you know, because the series went long with Duke and everyone thought, yeah. Sorry, go ahead, Gary.
This is exactly what Christian needed, especially going into the divisional matchup against Savannah. He's got Gallegos, he's got Cato. He's set up. Havana came in, stumbling in. Even though they won the division,
that's what she said.
I see Montreal just walking through this one as well. Sorry, Bob, but that's just the way it's going to go. Christian is going to take this one here, and he's starting to look like he's reloaded a little bit.
His team is definitely older, but his team is definitely more talented than Havana at this point. I mean, let's not completely write off Havana. Havana, you know, they...
You're missing Hardy, and there's a big drop-off with everybody
Hardy
else after that.
Zahardo,
There's a big drop-off from 1-2 to 3, 4, and 5. Havana's going to be hard-pressed to keep pace with him. And Montreal is first in run scored.
Yeah,
as good as they are pitching wise, they're not third best in the league right now in runs against without Hardy taking the mound every fourth day.
No, for sure. His bullpen and his third in runs against, Gary, as we've talked about offline before, it's pretty remarkable considering how fucking awful his bullpen is.
You got starters going seven innings. You don't need much. And he was fifth in runs scored. So while his offense, you can say, is not elite, they did the job. And
900 runs
did the job, and you got Hardy going, giving you seven innings and one run because he had a 1.8 ERA.
Well, now let me ask
maybe
a question.
Two at the most.
Is any of this a silver lining? Is any of this a silver lining for Havana? Hayagawa was 1-1, he had an ERA of 6, but he's in two complete games. And then Gallegos was 0-2, only pitched 8 innings on a few starts and gave up 20 hits in a couple games. I still agree with you. I don't see any way Havana wins this series. I mean, maybe anything can happen,
because
Havana's
still. Yeah, Gallegos might give up runs, and that's all fine and good, but I don't see anybody stopping Montreal. So he might give up 5 or 6 runs. What would be a bad start, but I can't see Montreal not scoring 7 or 8.
Yeah.
Not against what Havana's throwing out there.
Yeah, Havana is far less equipped to take on Montreal than even Seattle was to take on Duke City, in my opinion. So it could get ugly. It could get ugly quickly.
So we got about 14 minutes left, give or take. I want to go over the predictions I have for the second round.
Go for it.
I'll go through them quick, and then you guys can comment away.
One thing real quick.
I got Maple over San Francisco in 7 games. It's just going to come down to the 7th game, and anything can happen. That's just how I see that going. Mile High over Georgia. I like Georgia, but I just think Mile High they just got the talent to do what they need to do. That's also going to be 7 games. There was talk early on in the playoffs, experience versus non-experience. I just think Mile High has got a shit together. I just kind of touched on Montreal and Havana. I got Montreal in 6. I would not be surprised to see Montreal in 5. And then comes the big elephant in the room. I got Duke City over SoCal. I would not be surprised to see it in 5 either. It's not a rust factor. I just think too much has gone right for you to begin with, Mikey. I just think there's also this in the playoffs. You got teams that when they play each other often enough, all of a sudden that mystique, that aura starts to diminish. Where they think they can't beat them anymore. And I think we're past that point with Duke and SoCal. I think Duke finally thinks, yeah, I can beat them. And I think this is the year it happens. And it's not to say that you don't have things where they need to be. I just think this is the year that he ends up upsetting the apple cart. So anybody have any comments on that series?
Troy, I will let ladies go first as usual.
I'm not saying anything because I feel good about my team and I am ready to bring it all. And depending on how well he bounces back, I am ready to bring Ross Allen to 135-7 as a starter if I have to win this series.
I hear you. No, I mean, I get it. I mean, it's funny. I was talking to Gary last night. I was like, fuck, dude. Like, and this is legitimate speak here. Legitimate speak, guys. Last year, I did not feel confident about my team heading into the playoffs in general. This year, for the first time in my 5-year, you know, quote-unquote, last 5 years, I'm actually fully healthy for the first time in 5 years, which is crazy. So, obviously, I'm going to feel better about my team this year than I have in recent years. That being said, this series can go either way. I think we're the best 2 teams left in the playoff standing. Gary, I believe, thinks Montreal has the potential to go all the way regardless who he faces. I don't know. The series is going to be fun with me and Troy. I'm glad me and Troy are facing off for a 4th straight year. I know I usually win the series, quote-unquote, so it's more fun for me than him. But I do like facing the same team over and over again. I like seeing the same teams face each other over and over again, as I've commented on other series. That being said, I'm not going against myself. I'm not trying to jinx myself.
We're not saying that at all. But much like the Yankees, this year will resonate with Troy a little bit. Much like the Yankees in the late 70s, early 80s, they had Kansas City's number in 76, in 77, and 78. And then all of a sudden, 1980 comes around. And all of a sudden, that year just turned into something else. And I believe that was the year Kansas City finally got over the Yankees and they lost to St. Louis. Was that the – no, that was 85. What happened
85,
in 80?
They beat St. Louis. Okay. They lost to the Phillies.
Okay, and that was the Phillies' first championship in like 175 years or something. But it was that mistake. Once the Royals won that series against the Yankees in 1980, that then turned to 1983, and where no longer were the Yankees looked at as the Royals' nemesis. The Royals really thought they could beat them, and nothing says that more than Goose Gossage throwing that fastball up around George Brett's eyes and George Brett hitting it in the upper tank at Yankee Stadium. Any year prior to 1980, George Brett never would have hit that ball. As great as George Brett was, he just never would have done that.
Well, Troy had mentioned yesterday that he thinks if he's going to do it, it's going to be this year. You actually said that you don't think my run's over. You think it's on pause. I don't know, like... I
set that off list to you, yes. I, you know, one day the Yankees won in 96, 98, 99, 2000. What happened in 97? They didn't get worse. They just ran into a Cleveland team, and Mariano blew a game.
Like, like I told you offline, too, like, look, I'm not trying to, like, not add fuel to any flames. People like me and Troy get in each other's shit. We don't really. I mean, sometimes he annoys me, sometimes only him, I guess. But, like, if I'm going to lose to anybody in a series, I'm not going to be upset that if I lose to Troy. However, that being said, I'm not ready to lose yet. So... we'll see what happens.
You're never ready to lose.
And Troy, for all his – it's going to be interesting because last year in the Duke City series, and I was going back and looking, like last year he didn't see Bravo, my number one pitcher last year, aside from Cohen, ended up winning the Cy Young. But Bravo
where
last year –
where is Cohen now anyway? We haven't heard much of Cohen.
He's sitting on my non-used playoff roster.
Yeah, so he's, very, he's a very expensive paperweight.
He would love
Duke City.
Sources tell me from it. I can't give away my sources on this, but word has gotten back to this reporter here that he is itching to come back and play, and he wants to pitch in one of those two games.
Please start Cohen. Please start Cohen. I would love that.
He looked bad in September.
Yeah,
he had one good start, and I was like, nope.
It's crazy because we see people in this league slowly decline, but he went off back-to-back Cy Young awards. I mean, he's a back-end starter next year. I mean, he's going to play for someone and pitch decent, but I'm shocked that he's declined so quickly considering how people in this league tend to just hang on. I mean, the rate in which he declined was crazy.
He's 37 years old. He just
but he's never had a bad season, so that's the only reason why I'm a little confused that he did drop off so quickly. But no, just my point, and I think it'll be interesting for this series. Last year, Bravo, who was my best pitcher, didn't play at all in the Duke City series. And this year, I also have Tanner Johnson to throw in this series. So it'll be fun. I'll have two pieces I didn't have last year in my rotation who didn't play. And I don't have Cohen or Gallego. So my team is completely different than it was last year against Duke City in terms of my rotation. Nakashima started last year, and Nakashima's in my bullpen right now because I needed to make room for Kamura, who was also dinged up last year. So I'm basically throwing three guys last year who didn't throw against my Duke City. Now, Kamura only missed the 5 days last year, but unfortunately was right in the middle of that series. So he came back for the rest of the playoffs, but he didn't get to face Duke last year. So this is interesting also. He was good against – I mean, this is what's going to jinx him. He was 3-1 against Duke this year in the regular season. So what you know, that means, of course, he's fucking due to get crushed in one of these games. But it is interesting to note from SoCal, then. We have three guys who didn't play versus Duke City last year starting our games 1, 2, and 3. So that's the only thing that makes me a little bit hesitant, but I think we'll be okay pitching-wise. We just got to keep the pressure on Troy because he's proved in the playoffs so far that he's been getting big hits. So just got to try to limit those.
And I brought in another hitter. For that reason, I'm loaded. If it gets into late innings and I just need a big hit, I've got some guys that can come off the bench and make that hit. Real quick, I did want to say I also have
you got Rob Brown.
Right,
let's try
apparently it's working. I was gonna say I also am taking Montreal over Bob, which hurts my heart, but But I just don't think that Bob has enough to get by Montreal right now as well as they're playing. But the interesting little tidbit on that is if I do get past SoCal, the only team that's not in my division that I've beat in the playoffs is Montreal. So a little trivia there for you.
You mean the only team that Duke City's ever advanced past, right? That's the year we fought in the LCS, I believe.
Yeah.
Okay.
That wasn't in my division.
Yeah. Okay. Well, no, because
in,
you're right. You were always in my division.
What do you got, Georgia Mile High?
I'm still staying with Georgia. Mile High looks good, but I'm still staying with Georgia. I think they've kind of got it figured out, and they're gonna get going. And I'll take Maple on the other side.
I got Georgia
got
as well, and I got Maple. I got Georgia as well. I'm gonna go. I don't know. I mean, fuck. I'm gonna go Georgia. You know what? I'll come back to that one. But I got Maple in five. I do know that.
Okay. What do you got, Troy? San Francisco Maple.
I'm going with Maple. I just think he's the better team. Plus, he has most of my old team, so you know, you gotta kind of cheer for your old guys.
Yes.
So I think we're on this almost the same page. Both of you guys got Georgia. I got Mile High. We all have Maple.
We do not all have Montreal over Havana. We disagree on Duke City, SoCal. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah. No, I.
You're right.
Our series, I think, is going to be the best series of the playoffs. Gary disagrees. I think whoever wins this wins the World Series. Personally, I think we have the two best teams left. That's my opinion. That's not knocking anyone. I think, you know, I could be jinxing us, Troy, but I don't think so. I think we have the two best teams left. Maple is the one outlier if his young pitching pitches to their ability. Maple starting pitchers just need to keep it close in the first five or six innings because once he gets to that insane bullpen, that's where he really does his damage. And he has a very deep lineup. So Maple, I think, is coming out of the TML this year. That's my pick to come out of the TML.
Yeah.
I think I got Maple.
No, go ahead, Troy.
I'm sorry. I was going to say, we're selling T-shirts over in Duke City that say, no 20-inning game, no rookie pitcher. It's time for the Republic to fall.
Well, you got to bring your big boy pants, Troy.
I think Maple-San Francisco is going to be the most interesting matchup of the side. They're going to be close games all the way through. I think Georgia and Mile High has the potential to be an epic series because Georgia is just the unknown, as is Mile High. We don't know what we're getting out of them. I think the boring series is going to be Montreal and Havana. And I think your series is going to be there's going to be offense. Even though both of you guys pitching-wise are great, I see it being offensive and blowouts, and I don't see low-scoring games in the bunch. It's just one of those things.
All I know, and this may be arrogant, but I truly believe that 20-inning game was the greatest game in the history of ABL, period. And I think that series last year, if not the greatest playoff series, has to be right up there. And I don't see any reason why we can't do something similar this year. So maybe it's cocky, maybe it's arrogant, but that series was freaking amazing last year. If you're going to lose in something, at least lose in something like that, because that was a hell of a series, and I see the same thing coming this year.
I agree. I think the series is going to be extremely close. As I've told you offline, I believe, I don't know if it's the best game of all time, but my favorite game of all time is the Game 7 loss I had against Luke. That went 9 innings, and we gave up like 5 hits combined. Like, to me, after we both went 1-1, 2-2, 1-1, like that series, my first World Series loss to Luke is my favorite series of all time in ABL history, but that may be the best game of all time. I don't know. I'm partial to the Game 7 where Cohen lost, but I mean, the 20-inning game was a very interesting game.
We've had a lot of great series in this league.
No, I totally agree. Even though I lost the first World Series against Luke, that just sticks out to me as like one of the most epic World Series of all time. Just the way the entire series played out.
And like I'm saying, I'll put the series up for conversation, but you got to say, you know, that series outside of the game when I started the rookie pitcher, every game in that series went extra innings. Every single game.
It's a very good series. That's definitely true, and like not going to deny that. I think you're right. I think it was one of the best series in ABL history, and I don't think that's whether we rank it one or two or three, I don't think that's really debatable in terms of where it stood. It's definitely probably one of the best probably one of the top three all-time non-World Series round series. I do think also what gets overlooked because of the 20-inning game that we had is the series that last year Jacksonville and Maple had, where Maple lost three games walk-off, which was crazy. But I guess that one game wasn't walk-off because he still had a chance to hit it at home. But where Jacksonville was down 2-1, won 4-5 with walk-off, and then won 7 walk-off off of which is funny, Gary, since you can considering you found the bug in the game where it doesn't show career blown saves in the playoffs, and we know for a fact that Maple's guys blew 2 of them, including the Game 7 series finale in that series. I think that was one of the greatest of all time as well.
Yeah, there's been a lot. And you know what? Now with the live sim and everything else, that we can actually sit there and watch the games as they develop and get that sense of drama, it's probably one of the best things that they've incorporated in 16 was the ability to live sim.
So game one should be ran here shortly. Bob has exported. We
just
know
went
Gary
on Goldie. He said he was going to be in and out all day.
Yeah, it's fine. It's freaking not even noon yet. It's 11 o'clock my time.
2 o'clock our time.
Right. I'm just saying it's still early in the day. It's not like it's the evening yet. Do you guys have anyone to watch in either of the series? Obviously, we know Ross, Golden Arm, Allen, or you know, Terminator or something. He's going to be pushing over 300 innings. Is that going to be the death of Allen? We don't know. I think the cool storyline is that Duke City has a lot of my guys on his team. Havana's storyline is can they do it without Hardy? Mile High is we just overcame and now we have to face Mile High. I don't know, dude. I don't know how. I mean, fuck, dude. I love Ron.
Yeah,
I just can't take away that series.
Mile High's story is welcome to the party.
I don't know, man. I mean, he's counting on Elvis Callahan to go 3 starts to win the series, and I just don't see it. But I mean, he had a very good year. And then San Francisco and Maple, I think San Francisco and Maple and Duke City and SoCal are going to be the two best series of this round.
Yeah, I can't see San Francisco and Maple not going 7 games after what we saw throughout
the regular
season.
Yeah.
And beyond. It's just one of those things where, you know what, neither team gave up, neither team gave in. And at the end of the marathon, they were in a dead heat. So
do you guys?
I can't picture anything. I think you could turn off that series and just come back in Game 7 and see what happens.
Do you guys, off the top of your head, have a MVP? I'm looking right now in the TML idea. Unfortunately, Takahashi and Pac. Well, Pac's there, but Takahashi's not playing. This season, with just the amount of good play across the entire – and you know what? I just want to say something. Fuck Frank Lewis and Havana for getting the goddamn batting title and having like 250 less at-bats than Pittman. Fuck that guy.
The way they do that is you end up with your batting average, and it's in the Major League rule book. It's in Section 10 of the scorekeeping.
Yeah.
To win the batting title, you got to have 502 plate appearances. If you have less than 502 plate appearances, sac flies, walks count, and I'm not sure about hit by pitches. But if you
he
have
like
less than that.
He had 504, by the way.
Then he qualified. But let's say he ended up at 470. You would take the next 32 at-bats and make them outs, divide his hits into those new at-bats, those 30 at-bats plus what he had. If he's still leading the league in hitting, he wins the batting title with his current average.
His nickname needs to be Asterix. That's what I'm promoting.
Nah. Listen, he did it. He got there.
He did.
You know,
he did.
Good for
him. Just sent fucking 250 less at-bats. That's okay. I mean, aside from that, guys, I think we got like a minute left. I'm absolutely ready for the playoffs to start today. Goldie, get off your ass. And good luck, Troy.
Good luck.
Yeah, and I got to send a message out to the list and see if we can get the ballots and the voting opened up for us non-playoff teams who have nothing to do in between. We may as well get our voting in.
Yeah, and you know what? I would like to call out the 10 GMs who did not get their free prospect by just sending fucking playoff predictions. Everybody got a prospect, whether you won or not.
Did he give that to us already?
It was, yes. No. They're not in the game. But everyone would see that because people bitched about the first one, about the trivia thing. All you had to do was send in predictions, 1 through 6 in each division, or 1 through 7, and you got a free prospect. It might have been a low-level prospect, but you got a free prospect.